Welcome to the Empowered Women's Podcast, where we tell the stories of unstoppable female leaders who excel, uplift, and secure a clearer path for female leaders in the future. And I'm your host, Sharon Lee. And welcome to the Empowered Women Podcast. I'm your host, Sharon Lee with Pinnacle Strategic Advisors. And before we get started today, I'd like to introduce our sponsor. Thank you so much to Sean and the folks at Shantz Home Improvement. Shantz has served the metro Atlanta area since the year 2000, providing a fresh approach to home improvement. Whether you need siding, roofing, windows, or gutters, you can count on expert guidance and installation with a personal touch. So make sure you reach out to Shantz Home Improvement today. Okay, I am thrilled to announce my next guest. She embodies the idea of empowered women, and I'm proud to say that I call her both colleague and friend. So please welcome Dana Claire Redden, founder of Solar Stewards. Hi, Dana.
Hi, Sharon. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. What an amazing opportunity and great to see you again. It's been a minute.
It has been a little minute, but you know what? Every time we start talking again, it's like time hasn't passed and here we go. So look out, listeners.
So much has changed. So much has stayed the same. Right. And I'm just so excited about your podcast and enterprise entrepreneurship. It's just something that I know that you embody. It's really a pleasure and a privilege to be on your show.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Let's just dive in a little bit. Solar Stewards has been around for how long? And tell us really what Solar Stewards is.
You know me from those days starting out in Georgia doing distributed generation solar and just taking a look around the market. It became obvious that some of the projects in the communities that I know that we care so much about, those historically excluded communities, low and moderate income communities, really needed additional help in getting some of these projects done. And at the same time, we saw that the private sector was really moving forward on a lot of their climate goals, buying renewable energy in record-breaking amounts. But they were buying it from utility scale, you know, wind farms in Oklahoma, no shade to Oklahoma or wind. But we've got amazing projects and opportunities for economic inclusion here in the South and for all local communities. So we wanted to really figure out what was the barrier for a corporate who's making these renewable energy purchases to buy them from these impactful projects. That's where Solar Stewards really was created. We started in 2016. I think it was looking at an integrated resource plan and some of the conversations that were being had at the Public Service Commission and some of the international politics around the Paris Climate Accord and the U.S. pulling out at that particular time and being inspired by the private sector really stepping up and saying, you know, we're moving forward with our commitments anyway. So that is really where Solar Stewards and Social Recs originated, in that let's leverage the private sector, their corporate social responsibility goals for these projects that we know have incredible value.
Let's back up for 1 second, because a lot of people might not be super familiar with the solar industry in general. So you mentioned the Public Service Commission, and just to give a little background, that is the regulatory body of Georgia Power. When you're having those conversations, you might present testimony at a hearing or something like that, and they're making those final decisions. Also, you mentioned RECs. That's a big part of what you do. So let's not gloss over that. Why don't you give a definition of RECs and maybe even an example of how that might be used in real life?
Thank you. And I know that RECs aren't really the sexiest topic.
Sure they are. What are you talking about?
They're due for a rebrand. But that being said, RECs have been the part of renewable markets for decades now, since the 90s. And it's just to recognize that customers want to buy renewable energy. And when you have a grid, it's mixing electrons that are generated by renewable sources, by fossil sources. You need something to be able to track that renewable power. And that's how RECs really originated. So they're a tracking mechanism and they act as a subsidy in certain markets where you have a mandate to have a certain amount of renewable power, like a renewable portfolio standard that would be set forth by, let's say, a state government. You'd have a REC market. a compliance market, as they call it. In the South here, where Source Storage is based, we do work national and where we see each other at empowered events.
Yes.
Super fun. We have a voluntary market, and that's just what it sounds like. There's no real mandate from a legal standpoint, but certainly companies want to buy their renewable energy in voluntary markets as well. They need to do that by purchasing RECs. When the RECs are bundled with the power, it's called bundled RECs. When they're unbundled RECs, because you can sell the power separately from that renewable energy credit attribute. What we're looking at is the opportunity to aggregate those renewable energy credits. Every megawatt hour of renewable energy can generate a renewable energy credit. They need to be registered. There's several registries here in the U.S., and now there's one international. That maintains the credibility and authenticity of RECs. There's no double counting. There's a registry system. We're looking at ways to aggregate these renewable energy credits, primarily in voluntary markets, but really anywhere, that are generated from these smaller community-based and serving renewable energy applications, which tend to be more so solar, because that's just the nature of solar technologies. It really works well with that distributed generation. But we love distributed wind. There's even a company based in Atlanta that distributed hydro. We are solar stewards, but renewable energy credits can really be from any renewable energy application.
Perfect definition. I appreciate that. And truly, solar has been around for ages. We talk about solar as an industry, at least in Georgia. The industry really ignited around maybe 2011, that sort of thing. Georgia Power had been working on a program, soliciting bids for solar projects. And the company I worked for at the time had just transitioned to solar energy. We were actively creating an offering to the solar industry. And so here I was trying to spearhead that. I knew nothing about. I'm a marketing girl, you know, what am I doing? So what did I do? I went and became a member of the Georgia Solar Energy Association, and I just tried to learn everything I could. As in any nonprofit, you start getting really involved and trying to learn everything, and whoa, you end up on the board of directors, and there I was. That's where you and I met. When did you get involved in Georgia Solar? So that was probably between 2011 and 13.
Yeah, I think it was 13, 10 plus years ago now, but certainly wonderful memories, and just commend you for always looking for opportunities, Sharon, and get engaged. Only speaks to your abilities that you automatically take the leadership positions. I do remember joining the Georgia Solar Board. That was my first board experience. I'd never served on a board before, but I was certainly eager and excited. Just your presence made that so much more of a positive opportunity.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I was the first female chair of that organization. It's funny because, you know, we talk about women's issues here on this podcast and in our group and that sort of thing. And I was never made to feel unworthy of that position or lesser in any way. And looking back, considering how male dominated renewables are, that's pretty amazing. But I was far from the first board member for Georgia Solar that was female. We were in the middle of such a pivotal time in the industry. Maybe there just wasn't time for any of that. We were just rolling up our sleeves and going at that time. We were talking before about this is when HB 57 got passed on our watch, right?
That's right. When I first moved to Georgia, and I moved from California where my solar career really started in its infancy, I didn't know anything about solar policy. It was quite a come to Jesus moment.
Yep.
Listening to Lee Peterson, good friend of ours and friend of solar, at an Urban Land Institute meeting hosted on Emory's campus. I even remember the shoes I was wearing. I scuffed them. Now, I still have them because I look at that scuff and think that was the day I learned about the Territorial Act. I was looking at all types of cool business models for solar. I love third-party PPAs, power purchase agreements. I learned that they were illegal quickly after I moved here. So that was 2009, 2010. And that really was discouraging. House Bill 57 was a great accomplishment. I know so many folks worked so hard to advocate for that. And it's one of the reasons that I feel, just from a benchmarking standpoint, that Georgia has continued to grow our industry.
We went from, we being Georgia, went from being unranked nationally on solar installations in such a short period of time to, I think, hitting number 7 nationally in rankings. It was just this perfect storm. You know, Georgia Power had put out their program initially and people flocked to that program. And programs were opening up all over the United States. But anyway, that led the way. And then HB 57 opening up third-party ownership, really, just to explain the significance of that, if you are a business owner and you don't have the wherewithal, whether it's financially or whatever that challenge is that's stopping you from installing solar, thanks to this new bill or this new law, you can now have a third party come in and own that solar. So they are taking all the risk. You are essentially just renting your roof to them, buying the power back from them or whatever that arrangement it is that you make. They own the system. They maintain the system and all that. Again, it takes that risk away. And then the person that has the industry knowledge takes that risk on. It's a calculated risk. They know what they're doing and is such a win-win for everyone. And it really made a difference in this market. I know you saw the same thing.
Yeah, it was a real market signal. Although we would have loved to have seen more adoption of third-party PPAs, I think part of the work from there became what we focused on with social recs, and that, oh, we still need this PPA to be a profitable proposition for all involved, because that leads to the savings for that PPA customer. And when you're still looking at a return on investment or ROI of maybe 15 years, it was still not the most appealing proposition to folks if they were only saving a couple cents, because we still have very low energy rates in the South at that time as well. So I would have to say that was another opportunity to be inspired to find another revenue source for projects and also communities through the process. It was a monumental opportunity, similar to how I see FERC 2222, which was a ruling from the Federal Electric Regulatory Commission maybe 3 years ago, maybe 2022-21. I do remember it was in September. Distributed energy resources will have a role in wholesale markets moving forward. Just a market signal. All the details still needed to be fleshed out, but putting people on notice that this is the direction that we're going. That's what House Bill 57 did at the time.
We were talking about 10 years ago joining Georgia Solar and putting our toe in the water in this industry. But those of us that have survived in this industry for 10 years, I'm like, we're part of the wallpaper, you know? You would think that we'd been around for 100 years or something like that. We had these big, big milestones along the way, and you just check them off and go in a lot of ways because you're still running at breakneck speeds, because we were trying to catch up with other states and where things were in this market and all of that. But then there's the passing of the Inflation Reduction Act. That was 2022. And I know you are very, very hardworking on the SEIA board. So you can explain the huge significance of that passing into law. So that is real, and that is making some real impacts. But before you get into the IRA, if you will, explain what SEIA is, your involvement with them as a board member, and then maybe a little bit about the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yes. And I do want to say that it's always fun to catch up with you, because we do have so many chapters of our history, solar history, that we can reflect on, and that we feel a sense of progress and victory. Starting out in Georgia, and I would go to conferences in DC, and they'd be like, bless your heart, you're down there doing the solar thing.
Right. And
now,
is there sunshine in Georgia? Right, what are you saying?
You know, they knew we had a hard climb. But now, speaking of SEIA, we were sitting in a meeting in Senator Ossoff's chief of staff was addressing the audience, and he said, we see Georgia as the solar manufacturing capital of the world.
Wow.
And I just had to look up and just think, won't he do it? Because when I moved here, I thought, what did I just do?
Right.
And now we hear this leadership. So, of course, that was spawned by a number of federal legislation, including Inflation Reduction Act, but some other infrastructure bills as well. But the Inflation Reduction Act really is such a game changer, unprecedented amount of federal funds pouring into communities, one that have been historically excluded through the Justice 40 initiative, which basically says, let's make a better transition to renewable and clean energy by focusing on those communities that have been left behind. Being from Appalachia originally, Western Pennsylvania, I know what economic exclusion looks like on the backs of the coal miners and steel workers that really made folks like Andrew Carnegie very wealthy,
mm-hmm.
and then still kind of languishing in kind of an economical dead zone when those companies left. All that to say, this IRA is really focused on the energy communities, like the where I'm from, also multiple parts of Georgia, just making sure that we have that domestic supply chain for all of this. So right. That's just so exciting when we can onshore these opportunities. Solar Energy Industries Association has been monumental in that, and I can't consider myself a policy person, but I worked to support their hard efforts and all of the politicking behind that. I mean, they were active on the Hill every day and night, making sure that these legislators knew what was in it for them and their communities locally. We continue to defend it, and it was just a monumental achievement. And I just want to give it to the hardworking SEIA staff and the rest of my fellow board members. I'm on my second term as an at-large board member, meaning I'm voted in. If I go out for another term, vote for me.
You got it.
Yeah.
Please.
Thank you. Because it's stressful having to run. But I'm grateful. Thank you to the SEIA members who voted me in twice. And I'll continue to be a voice for consumer protection, small business, minority-owned business, women-owned businesses. And I'm just excited that our industry is really ready to embrace all of the value that diverse leadership looks like.
Absolutely. And going into the value piece of that, historically, you talk to a business owner, for example, about transitioning to solar. There's great big ideas about how this makes sense to use clean energy and that sort of thing. But then it comes down to dollars and cents. The IRA really was a game changer for communities that you have mentioned, as well as the business community, because you can bring those things together. And it's not just this one tax credit for this. You can actually add them on top of one another. That becomes such a monumental game changer from every side. Would you want to speak to any of that?
I can speak to it in a number of ways. We had the opportunity to really look at communities that wanted to go solar and that just couldn't.
Right.
One, because being in the Southeast and lacking certain policies and incentives, but also because of those historical compounding barriers of systemic oppression, redlining that denied people home ownership. They're pushed into a renter situation, can't accumulate generational wealth. They don't have control over their particular rooftop. All of these compounding things we're seeing now, the opportunity to incentivize focusing on those communities. And that looks like these adders. And to give another shout out to Lee, we don't have a domestic energy policy, but we do have a tax policy that is looking to try to fill that gap. And so we love a workaround.
Right.
We're all about it. And there's these different tax adders that you can, like you said, stack. If you're in an energy community, if your project is focused on low and moderate income homes, if you get in line and successful in that, get that additional allocation. What all that's doing is just showing the market that there's value on these projects. And personally, being an advocate for these projects since before the IRA, I can tell you that even somebody in that community trying to get any attention from installer or someone to do a feasibility was challenging enough. They could see on the surface that's going to be a project with a lot of extra hurdles, and they would not give it any attention. I can't say anyone's to fault for that. As a small business owner, I know my bandwidth, and some projects I just have to pass up. But this particular opportunity is really drawing in, just as you said, business to serve these communities in a way they've never been before.
Right, right. And then to go into Georgia specifically, you know, Georgia Power is required to go through this rate study every 3 years called the Integrated Resources Plan, IRP. So they go in, and I think our last one was in 2022, and they approve Georgia Power's request to increase power rates by 12% that would be initiated or rolled out over a 3-year period. So you have this perfect storm in my book where you've got all of these things that are saying that we are incentivizing solar, we are bringing the rates down, we're making it very, very attainable. At the same time that rates are going up, it just makes the cash flow so much easier to come about. And that's not going anywhere. if I have to guess, the rates are going to continue to go up. And so it is only going to make it more advantageous over time. So you, as solar stewards, are able to really paint quite a great picture about where this is going.
You know, that's so true. There's an adage, it's expensive to be poor. Right. So these communities, they need the attention to their energy burden. In Georgia, in Atlanta specifically, is definitely up there on the list of cities with the highest energy burden. In Atlanta, I think almost a decade running, if not more, have the highest income inequality. You can think about 12% is not a little bit, but even worse for families that are already energy burdened, and they're trying to pick between buying prescriptions and paying a light bill. And so when we can use technology to, of course, lower their bill, give them that control over their power, but also include more economic opportunities. Maybe there's an opportunity to start a new career in the clean energy transition, whether that's through energy efficiency. There's just so many ways that we're looking at the economic benefits and inclusion of what's happening now for families. But you're right, it will continue to go up, inflation, rising energy costs, international macroeconomic things that trickle down to our community, supply chain issues. We just have to understand that certain families really need to be shielded from that.
In the end, it just shows that opportunities right now are endless for sustainable efforts. And it goes so far beyond just economics. I think that that's where I'm bottom lining that, even though economics are at our fingertips, it just makes the conversation bigger.
And of course, with two entrepreneurs here on the call, I'm always excited about the market opportunities that that means. We talk about small business being an economic driver in America, job creation, and even just that sense of community and the honor of work. It's just self-determination. There's just so much that entrepreneurship really adds. I'm excited through multiple things that we're a part of, including SEA, also including BOSS, Black Owners of Solar Services. Through BOSS's ECAI program, we won a DOE cooperative agreement, Department of Energy cooperative agreement, to make sure that opportunities for adjacent entrepreneurs that are already doing very similar industries, maybe they're doing tax advisory services, maybe they're doing roofing, understand that they can pivot their business into this opportunity that we just described, this unprecedented investment in new infrastructure and in business, and they can get involved and they can hire more folks. It's just such a virtuous cycle right now. I see entrepreneurship at the center of that. I just wanted to stress that, and any entrepreneur listening at any phase of your journey, we're excited for you.
And let's shift gears just a little bit. We've talked about the future of solar and the journey and the entrepreneurship and that sort of thing. But you, as the founder of Solar Stewards, let's talk about how being female fits into that discussion.
I consider it to be a superpower in that when you're talking about business, you talk about a competitive advantage. It certainly doesn't make things easier to be a minority in any aspect. But at that same thought, it is a distinguishing factor. And being a woman certainly brings a lot of skills that the industry needs. And so to be able to really embrace those has really been an opportunity. And then to have a community like Empowered Events that really brings us all together to really talk about challenges, but also, you know, opportunities and ways to navigate different things. Because of sexism, a lot of barriers around that access to capital, and sometimes the way your innovations and thoughts are dismissed, you have to turn that on the head and see it as an advantage and keep at it.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned access to capital. On a previous podcast, I was talking to a female CEO, and one of her mentors, when she was looking for funding, had told her to scale that back, and then meaning her femaleness. And wow. She's like, well, okay, I guess I could do that, or I could just be authentic and show that I know what I know, and several million dollars later, who wants? So go her, you know. But I do think that going back to like our Empowered Women's events and that sort of thing, being able to sit around a room and talk with business leaders, whether you're in renewables or whether you're just in a women's leadership role, being able to bounce those ideas off and really, you know, having that space. I think women do that very well, where we can get together and start talking about topics and all of that and really support one another through that collaborative way that we are. I just think we go about things differently. And I think that that is good.
Yes, we bring a whole new skill set to this industry. And I think part of the challenge is we do lead differently when the whole business community, and I guess communities in general, can embrace that leadership looks different. And anytime we talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, we're just acknowledging that when you have diverse voices, you have more innovation, different ways of people thinking about things and going about things, things that maybe never occurred to. So bringing those minds together, I mean, there are actual statistical reports about the value of diverse teams. So it's not an anecdotal experience here. These diverse teams that women are now more of a part of are crucial for our success, particularly in an industry that is really fueled by innovation like renewable energy.
And that segues really nicely into mentorship, because there's no reason for women that are entering this field or workforce in general to reinvent these wheels. I mean, we are there to help steer them and that sort of thing. And it's interesting, I always talk about mentorship on the podcast, and I do feel like everybody has their different approaches to it. You might have someone that has a very large corporation and they have different things in place that are actual systems. But most of us, that's not the case. It is more, you know, I want to pull you along and I have just my own personal way of doing it. So tell us a little bit about your thoughts on mentorship.
I have to give it to all of the experiences I had, just like your previous guest on the show who was apparently dismissed and diminished. Similarly, I use those to feel like I never want someone to feel like this. I do remember first getting involved in the clean energy sphere. And for whatever reason, this attitude of just negativity and cynicism, I had to realize when people would look at me maybe young and bright eyed and kind of like, oh, yeah, well, why do you face these, you know, next round? But I had to recognize that those were folks that came up with the industry in the 70s, and they had a really great run with Carter, and then it all just slammed shut when they took his panels off the White House, and then they basically had to sit out for a decade. And then its resurgence, it was kind of like, okay, been there, done that. And so I, one, thought, let's not get comfortable. We've got a good policy that doesn't mean it's going to stick around. So you always got to make sure to defend it. It is easy to get cynical when you see certain things work so hard and certain things fail, but also to always embrace that younger generation. And especially from a personal level, I think, I don't want to be doing this until I die. You know, I'd like to retire.
Right.
I am looking forward to this next generation to pass the torch to, but I want to put it like that because they're already these youth climate advocates. I mean, they're not even old enough to vote and they're making a difference out here.
Right.
Internationally, nationally here, I'm just so proud of them. I'm so inspired by their ability to just jump in, be outspoken, know that they have the agency, that their voice counts through mentorship, sponsorship, advocacy. I want to support them in any way that I can and that Solar Stewards can.
Well, I think that's a perfect answer. And as we wind down this conversation, just to lighten it up a little bit, I have to ask you what you do in your free time. Well, I put that in quotes.
Thank you. Air quotes for free time. I love spending time outdoors, and that's really where I started my love of the environment. Getting some friends to go on some hikes, do a lot of traveling. A lot of it's for work, but sometimes if it's possible to stay an extra day or two to check out some local sites. Home improvement projects.
Oh,
yeah. So just a variety of calming things. I think that maybe once I do retire, I'll put air quotes on that too.
All right.
I might be more of a thrill seeker when I don't have a career that's so thrilling.
There you go. There you go. You're going to find
chill stuff.
Chill stuff. Good way of saying it. Good deal. Well, this has been a fantastic discussion. I always enjoy it. Although I have to say, this wasn't as fun as dinner on Times Square last year. That was like this time of year last year, I think, at a SIA function.
Oh my gosh, was March. Yeah.
Was. Russell Norman, he's coming back through this conversation, and several Georgia folks.
I think that just speaks to the progress of our industry. And it's always inspiring to speak with you, Sharon, because to know that we started in an industry in a region where it was just seemed to be a wild idea. And now we're here. And so anybody listening who you might think they don't do solar in Indiana, or they don't do solar in Arkansas, or pick any number, they don't do solar in name some other place, to know that small groups of people can come together and really make a difference. And you might be thinking you're facing big companies, big utilities, and it seems insurmountable. But our region is a testament to it can be done and change does happen.
Absolutely. And so if someone wants to reach out to you, tell us the best way to do that. We'll put links below.
Probably the best way is to connect on LinkedIn. So I'm Dana Claire Redden on LinkedIn, and that's C-L-A-R-E. Solar Stewards is also on LinkedIn. Follow our page for energy equity news. Of course, our website, solarstewards.net, and that's got more resources on what we're up to, lots of different maps. We love maps and data, but also information on social RECs, or social renewable energy credits, and how if you've got a project in the affordable housing or a school district or in an energy community or any historically excluded community, on the website, you can see under methodology how many different communities, peoples, and missions that term actually speaks to. We're looking forward to bringing more community partners on our Solar Stewards marketplace to make sure that they have the opportunity to pair with these equity-minded renewable energy buyers. That's how you can find us, solarstewards.net.
Perfect. Again, I can't thank you enough for joining us here today on the Empowered Women's Podcast.
Thank you, friend.
Yes.
Such a pleasure.
Well, I look forward to seeing you again soon. And again, I can't thank you enough.
Just let me know when the next Empowered Women event is. Oh, pulling up.
You know it. All right, great. Have a fantastic day. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you for listening to Empowered Women. If you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star review and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcasts, and share with those you think can benefit from this information. Please email all questions, suggestions, and compliments to Sharon at PinnacleStrategicAdvisors.net. The Empowered Women podcast is produced by the Podcast Laundry Production Company and executive produced by Sharon Lee.